Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Psychosocial therapist Mariam Jacobs from the Netherlands is back with us today to speak on issues in America, which has resulted in the downfall of individuals. However, she's going to be speaking mainly today on a film that is about ready to come out, and I will let her give out the good news because I am looking forward to it. Mariam, would you like to introduce yourself once again to those who are not familiar with you and tell us a little bit about what you've been doing for the past couple of years?
Yeah, I will do that, Leona. First, thanks for inviting me again. I am from the Netherlands, and in my country, I work with as a psychosocial therapist also with people who are incarcerated. In my approach of incarcerated people, I find it important to meet the human being behind the crime. That's the center of my work. And to show that people behind bars are the same people as we are, without denying the crime they have committed. That's, I think, very important because not denying the crime means that an incarcerated individual has a chance to develop responsibility and remorse. And that takes time, but it can be done. And I also graduated for my Master of Philosophy, and I graduated on the subject, the United States prison system. And in my thesis, I compare the United States prison system with the concentration camps in World War II, and in my book and in my thesis, they are the same. I look at the patterns that are hidden beneath a system like the prison system and the concentration camps, and I try to find universal aspects which I have found and described. And I think what I want to do with publishing my book is to contribute to discussion and contribute to awareness of people. So awareness about what is really happening behind the facts that we already know. So we know, for instance, that mass incarceration is influenced by racism, by corporal powers, and more of these issues. But I wanted to dive deeper into universal patterns of systems like this who are devastating to human beings. I wrote my book about it. It's going to be published, and it will be translated in English. So I also want to have it published in the United States because, of course, it's about the United States system. So that's what I did, and I started a new academic study on religion. That's a whole other chapter in my life, but that's what I did, and that's because I love to study and I love to understand things, because if I understand things, then I become more aware myself of how of the perspective I have on the world, on other human beings. So understanding is for me a very important part in my own life. And that's what I do. And
I want to say one thing, Mariam, which I didn't say in the beginning. I want the audience to know, Mariam Jacobs, she's been working on this book and also this film for some time now. It's been a couple of years. And one of the things I can honestly say is that she is one advocate that knows what she's talking about, because she actually goes into the prison. She's been in a U.S. prison. She does volunteer in work in the prison in Netherlands. This is someone who I admire because of that. There are so many advocates out there in the world today and people that are working on prison issues who have not even been in a prison. They have based their philosophies and they have based their works on what they have either heard or what they have read, but they haven't exactly experienced it. And Mariam, I just wanted to get that out there because that's one of the things that makes it so important, the work that you're doing and the way that you view things. And I just want to thank you again for that. And I will let you take over again. I'm sorry.
No, thank you. Thank you for adding this. Yeah, I think experience is number one. If you want to make some reform, if you want to make changes, you first have to get inside the prison and experience the prison by yourself. The first time I entered the United States prison system, that was because of the film that is going to be released on November 25th this year, so in a few weeks on Amazon Prime. And that stems from a time that I was communicating with a incarcerated person in Florida. He has a life sentence because he committed a horrifying crime, I must say. And I wanted to understand his environment. So at that time that I started to communicate with him, I didn't know anything about prisons, incarceration, crimes. I had never thought about it, but because I started to communicate with this man, I wanted to understand this man in his own environment. And at that time, he was incarcerated already for about 20 years, I think. And that was a start for me to dive into what is the system, how does it function. So I started to look for articles and qualified documentaries. And I was very shocked, shocked about what I read and what I saw and everything that was wrong with it. So it's a heavy subject. And from there, I wanted to experience what it was to be in the prison. So I started to work as a volunteer in the Dutch prison system. And it made it possible for me to experience something about the sphere of incarceration. 3 years ago, it was a few months before the pandemic started. I was invited to participate in the film Death Row Angels, and for that film, I was invited to go to Florida to visit this person that I was communicating with, and there I have experienced the sphere in the visiting room. The suppression, the power, and the power play. I've seen power play too. And it shocked me because it was 25 years ago that I have visited concentration camp Auschwitz. And when I came into the visiting room in Florida, I had to think about my visit in Auschwitz. And what I really found shocking was that entering the prison system, I felt that I was entering a complete different reality. And that fascinated me. I wanted to understand this reality that is so different from our reality in the free world, but at the same time, we are all in the same world. So the reality of the prison system is in the same world as the reality that I live in. And during communicating with this man in Florida, I also noticed this gap between these two worlds in one world, in fact. And that made me doing the research on the system because I really, really needed to understand it completely. So I went much deeper than the well-known facts. I wanted to know, like, you know, if you look at racism, we all know racism is a big issue when it concerning mass incarceration. But then I want to know what is racism and where is racism based on and what does it mean and why do we have this desire or this wish to exclude people. So I go that far, and I think that's needed because it has to do with not only knowing facts, but becoming conscious about how we deal as a human beings, how we deal with each other, and why do we lock up people or exclude people or fight or, why we have racism.
There's so much of that going on. There's so much of that going on now, and it's something that really needs to be addressed. But it also, awareness needs to be brought out, because so many people don't understand. There was a time when everyone would think that when there were complaints about racism, it was just made up, or it was just being overly polarized or whatever. But now they see it for themselves. So that's awesome that this is all coming out now. They can start working together, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope that too, because that's the only solution. And, we are living now in scary times, of course, but cooperation is the only solution to get back to peace. It's a long road, I think, but we cannot stop fighting for, not fighting, but trying to work peacefully.
Exactly. So when again is the film coming out?
Yeah, I will tell you a little bit more about the film. The film is coming out on November 25 of this year on Amazon Prime. And I was asked to participate in the film. And I really have thought about it before I said yes, because I wanted the film to be honest, sincere and serious, not some kind of sensational film. And so I talked with the director of the film. It's her film, it's not my film, of course. And it felt good to me, so I said yes. And this film is about European women who are involved with people who are on death row in the United States. In my case, this man, where I communicated with, was not on death row, but it has a life sentence. And there are four portraits of women, including me, and the director of the film goes to the background story of the women. So the film is mainly focused on the women, and she tries to understand the motivation, the intrinsic motivation of women who do this, because these men never get out again. And so what is it, why do women in the free world, in Europe, want to have a relationship or get romantically involved with a man on death row? And each of us had, her own story. I will not tell all the stories, because then I spoil the film. It's a documentary. But in the end, I think when I saw the film back, the main message is, in fact, that family values are very important. And that also applies to my story, because my story is a very heavy one. I have been involved with this man in Florida for about 1.5 years, and I fell for him. And it turned out that he was very charismatic. He was very good in writing beautiful letters, so he was well-spoken in his letters. He read a lot of books. He had a lot of topics that he could talk about with me. So, but it turned out that he had a lot of narcissistic elements. So he had a big ego, no responsibility, no empathy. And in the end, he tried to use me, for getting money. And it turned out he still was using drugs in the system. And he tried to get money from me. And, I had to analyze what was happening, because, I wanted to understand my own vulnerabilities. I wanted to understand why I had fallen for this man, why I had not listened to my own intuition, because my intuition has warned me a lot of times, and I still went on. And I also tried to understand this man, because this man is not a bad man, but he has an evil side, and that's, his narcissist elements, and he had a bipolar disorder, a drug problem. And the killing he did, he killed a woman and her six-year-old son. He strangled and then hid it. And so I didn't want to deny his crime. I never do that. I also, when I work with incarcerated people here in the Netherlands, I never deny the crime because I want to be realistic. So I also was realistic with him. And I noticed that he did not feel, that he didn't understand what he had done. He did not feel any responsibility. He couldn't feel it. And there were a lot of signs that this man maintains a danger. So it was a very intense process also for myself, because I also had to understand my own role in all this without finger pointing at who is right and who is wrong. But, you know, what I do with restorative justice, I also apply to myself. Looking at what's happening here, what is my pitfall, and why didn't I recognize my pitfall in time, and what made me not listen to my intuition. There is a lot of lies, manipulation involved. It was really a difficult time for me, and it was traumatic, but because I've analyzed it, in the end, I could leave it behind me. What I learned from it is that, because now since 2 years, I am communicating with a loved one in Massachusetts. And that's the opposite of my first experience. This person is very sincere. We have beautiful conversations. We are also realistic in the situation, honest. He never would ask me for money or whatever. So that's a complete, this is very positive after my negative experience. And I think why I find it important that I contribute to the film is that it's beautiful that women communicate with this man, because they have a really hard time in this evil system. But women, please be also alert. That's what I did not do. And I became a victim. Also a victim of myself. So please be alert. Never give money, because there's a whole industry in the prison system. I learned that from another incarcerated man who has written a book about it, about the economy between prisoners in the system and the pen pal. I call it the pen pal industry. It's also big business between prisoners. Like, you know, when you send photos, some women send sexy photos. Well, prisoners sell the photos to each other. You see, poems are sold. So it can be that a woman receives a beautiful poem, but her loved one never wrote it, but he simply bought it from another prisoner, all kinds of stuff like this. And sometimes men have also multiple women, and the women don't know that from each other, so they have multiple women to ask money from. But I also want to say, is be alert, but it doesn't mean that it would be bad to do it, because what I do now, I enjoy it very much. The connection that I have now. So it's beautiful to do, but it's really important to listen to your intuition and be alert, and don't give money. That's very important.
I remember there was a woman, her name was Lorraine, and she was from Australia, and her situation was similar to the one you mentioned earlier when you had that experience with the incarcerated individual in Florida. She was involved with an incarcerated individual in Texas, and she was actually flying back and forth at least once or twice a year to see this man, until she came across it where she found out that he had been writing to other women. She had noticed it on a pen pal site, and he was talking about romance and all of these things, and she was devastated because I guess she was with him for a couple of years. But things like that do happen, and they're even a lot of times, even some of the decent incarcerated individuals will warn women. They will let them know what to look for and how to be cautious in situations like that. So I can see it happening.
Yeah, and I think it's also very complicated because, you know, when I was falling in this pitfall in Florida, I also, there was a part of me that understood what he was doing, because we don't know how it is in the prison system. We have never been incarcerated. And in the prison system, these men have to survive. So that's another part, you know. What I felt is, and what I became very aware of, was that you have to deal with two complete different realities. The reality of the prison system is completely different from our reality. Everything is different. The codes, the values, how people deal with each other. We don't know how it is to be in there. So, trying to get money because, you know, the food is bad. They want to buy some more food at commissary. And I can understand it. And so it's not so simple that I condemn this man in Florida, because he is in a very difficult system. But it has multiple levels, and that makes it complicated. And that at that time, for me, it made it very confusing. You know, I was angry, I was sad, I was in love, but at the same time, I felt crazy to be in love with somebody who never gets out. And in fact, I didn't know that man because, you know, I could not meet him. I have only met him once. And we had this beautiful stories about, yes, but we feel like one, and we connect so well. But it's only by letter and, you know, an email. It's not physical. And that makes it all so confusing. The pen pal thing is, that's why women really have to be alert. And if somebody is only looking for some kind of love or trying to escape her own position in real life because of problems, issues, then it's a very dangerous thing, because then such a woman, you know, is already vulnerable. And there are men in prison who have special intuitions to recognize this vulnerability and take advantage of it. And that's, you know, at that time, that's what I've experienced. And if I not would have analyzed it for myself, you know, myself and this man and the situation, it really would have devastated me. But I wanted to come to understanding, what I always do. I also did at that time. So I learned very important lessons from it. By analyzing it and trying to understand it. Otherwise, if I would not have done it, I would not have learned anything from it, and it would have been only harming. And now I also learned from it. But yeah, it has really two sides, and that's in fact what you see in the film. So it's not a rejection of pen pals, but it is, you know, the message of be careful. And when a woman wants to start to write, let her be honest to herself about the motivation, why she wants to do that. Because I think I also know women who write with, men in the United States system, but they do it on a friendship way. And they do it to, you know, to be that connection. And that's very sincere. And they enjoy it. But if relationship stuff comes around, then it's hard. Because the both of you are communicated from two different worlds. And that's very difficult. It's very difficult. And there's a lot of fantasy involved then.
I've been advocating for almost 25 years now for the incarcerated men, women, and youth. And one of the things I have to say is I know prisoners who have lived indigently in the prison system because they have not requested money from family members or from friends or from anyone. And they live indigently. And because there's so many that are asking money and getting it from their friends and their families, their wives, their girlfriends, or whatever, it's letting the Department of Corrections down easy, because they're not fulfilling their obligations, and that is to provide for these incarcerated individuals, because now they're starting to charge, or they have been charging, for things that they normally would never have charged in the past, because they're seeing the money rolling in. And then we also read on the internet and in the news about COs and people getting caught. These are people in uniforms and titles getting caught smuggling drugs inside. And these people that are providing monies for their loved ones, a lot of times they don't know if that's the case with their own loved ones, because some women are talking about sending their loved ones $100 a month, $70 a month, all this money going into the prison system. And then, as you mentioned earlier, prisons for profit. The prisons are profiting off of these things. So there is a major issue in a lot of these dynamics that are going on in and around the penal system.
Yeah, it's a whole economy in itself. That's what this man I knew, I was not involved with him, but he wrote a book about it, about this economy. The man in Florida that I was involved with, he also, for instance, made knives to sell them to gang members, also to make money. And the loved ones who are sending money, it's also dividing in incarcerated people, you know, that somebody has a lot of money and another person has nothing. And it's all part of this, you know, divide and conquer game. And it's very difficult to fight this, because I think this economy is part of the system. It serves a goal. And there is no, the incarcerated people are not provided for by the system itself, because they are not really considered human. So we know about the food problems, we know about healthcare problems, it's well known, and it's not really changing, not enough.
Another thing that happens sometimes, though, is when someone gets caught, or when someone gets in a fight over certain things, it's not just the two parties that are fighting or the person that's getting caught. It affects the whole, everyone on the block, because they all get put on lockdown. And I don't think this is fair either, that people who are doing absolutely nothing are getting put on lockdown when others are either fighting or they're caught with drugs or whatever the case may be. I think that's also unfair to those who are trying behind those prison walls to do the right thing.
And I think, you know, when we consider all this and we think, and I go back then to the subject of the topic of the film, then I think a lot of European women who are far away from the United States don't know all this. I didn't know. I didn't know anything about the penal system. I didn't know anything about being, you know, incarceration crimes. I never thought about it. So I started completely blank. And then I cannot look at, you know, I cannot see through walls. So, but because I dived into the system step by step, I came to realization what was happening. If I wouldn't have done that, I never would have known, you know, where the money that I gave was going to. And I didn't give a lot of money because he got involved with another woman at the same time as, you know, a little bit later than me. And that woman, she was so naive. She paid $500, $200. She was completely brainwashed. This man in Florida, that's only this particular man. He is, you know, if he would be free, he would be a kind of cult leader. You can compare it to a cult leader, you know, charismatic, big ego, and you know, well-spoken, love bombing. That's also a very important element of the narcissistic disorder. And when you don't know, then you fall for it and you don't recognize it. Now I will recognize for the rest of my life, but I learned it the hard way. And when a man like that is behind walls, then you even cannot see it because it's not physical. And then so that makes it very difficult to recognize it. So a lot of women who never have been thinking about the prison system and then communicating can also idealize a person in the system because, you know, they don't have to deal with that man on a daily basis. You know, they don't have domestic problems or whatever. That all falls away. So also for women who are trying to flee from personal problems in their, you know, daily life. I hope they are not going to communicate with these men, but try to first solve the problems in their own lives. So yeah, the film is partly about that, but it's also about a good part of, you know, pen pals who write with incarcerated people. Yeah, I think that's my biggest lesson of it was that, it gave me a lot of good things too, because of my adventure in Florida, I did, you know, write my book and graduated on the subject. And yeah, well, I'm on the radio show from time to time. And I think it's, well, in that way, I try to contribute to more awareness about the system. And hopefully it leads to some kind of reform, and at least that people start thinking about what are we doing as a society, locking all these people up without a rehabilitation, because I think that's the main problem, that there is no real, no decent rehabilitation in the system.
That is so true. You know,
yeah, that's what I just said is there is no rehabilitation. So a lot of guys keep having all these issues, and they develop a survival mode. And from that survival mode, they start to communicate with women. And these women are not aware of what's all happening. And you get in confusing situations and dangerous situations. That's what happened to me. But I learned from it. And it made me write a book and trying to understand the system.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. That book is going to be very interesting, and the film, because there's so much of the things that you've been talking about that have occurred in the prison system and with the people incarcerated. I just feel that this, and Families Against Mandatory Minimum is nationwide, and they've been encouraging everyone to start calling their legislative members and trying to get their legislative members to get more involved, to go into the prisons and meet with these incarcerated individuals, as you've been doing, and trying to get more information about the stories. You're all the way in the Netherlands, and you know more about what goes on in these prison systems in the United States than a lot of people that actually live here, than a lot of legislative members, than a lot of advocates, than a lot of even family members who don't really get involved in their loved ones' situations except to provide them with money or whatever they're getting from them. They need to learn more about what their loved ones are doing behind those prison walls, what's going on.
Yeah, they have to get more insight in the system itself. That's what my book is about. And that's why I want to have it translated, and I will keep you informed. I want to have it translated. I also will send it to some key figures in politics, because I want some people to know. As you know, on YouTube, I watch key figures who there is a channel, it's called Democracy Now. They invite very interesting, well-known people, politicians, but then scientists who are realistic in what is happening in the world, but also in, you know, what's happening with the system. And those are the people like Noam Chomsky, Jeffrey Sachs is a very huge economist. He's a professor, and he's very realistic about what's happening, with the war now in Ukraine, and how the United States puts all these trillions of dollars in it instead of taking care of their own citizens. But those people you don't see on television, because television is, supported by corporations, so you only get to see what the corporations want you to see. So you get a little bit brainwashed. But I can really say, I hope that people go to YouTube, watch these people like Jeffrey Sachs. He's very honest. Noam Chomsky, you know, these are the contra sounds of what you normally see on television. And they are very important. You don't need to agree all the time, but it's important to hear more perspectives than only one. And then you can base your own perspective on it. And that's conscious thinking. And that's what's sometimes missing. a lot of people don't think. They only follow, you know, the big flock, but they don't think for themselves. And I think it's time that people start more thinking about themselves instead of blindly following the, you know, the big sheep and the corporal power and the materialistics. I think, yeah, well, that's the point.
I sometimes wonder if everyone understands the language that's used with when it comes to politics. And I think sometimes people may not understand fully what is being said, but they will go along with their peers because they feel that their peers know what's right. But it's most important to try to understand what's being said at all times so that one can make their own decisions. And I think that happens a lot too.
Yeah, and I think what's important is to ask questions. That's what I did for my book. You know, I could say, yeah, well, racism is a problem for mass incarceration, but then I want to know, and there the questioning starts, what is racism? How does it look like? What is this need for us to divide people? What is this need to exclude people? Why do we have this? Where is it coming from? What does it tell us about society? And what does it tell me about myself? Being critical about yourself, about society, and try to understand things a little bit more in depth. You know, I think that's very important. But because most people don't do that, you can have mass incarceration because, you know, everybody accepts that it is. Oh, yeah, well, it is what it is. And they lock up bad people. That's a very easy way of judging because it's so much more complicated, as we know.
And even going beyond racism, I have to say this. A lot of times the employees, if they have a disliking for incarcerated individuals, a specific group or whatever, person or whatever, they end up making it very difficult for that individual or those individuals to do anything. And a lot of times they will, it's almost sad to say this, but a lot of times these prison officials and COs, a lot of them will go with the worst because they got that protection and they can get them to do what they can't do themselves, which is sad. They have set prisoners up. They have tried to get prisoners labeled as snitches. They have done all these things. And this is with a lot of people. It doesn't necessarily even have to just be with races, although that has a major, a primary problem. But they do it with a lot of others too. And I think it's time that they start being focused on more so sometimes than some of these incarcerated individuals.
Yeah, you know, a lot is based on power, and what I find sad when I look at how staff is trained, they are trained to see incarcerated people as their enemies. They are bad people. They, you know, in the training, they learn that incarcerated people are bad people. So you start already negative, and it's that mindset that gives so much problem. And that is also because I think what I sometimes think is that in the United States, there is a lot of judging, you know, biases, but judging who is good, who is bad. He's a good guy. He's a bad guy. What is a good man and what is a bad man? We don't know. It's so personal. You cannot say that. You know, when you look at restorative justice, that's the concept. I think that's the answer to everything. Restorative justice doesn't judge. Restorative justice doesn't look at who is right or who is wrong, but what has happened and how can we restore the damage together. That's restorative justice. That's what's too much missing in the United States. There are projects, but it has to be more. It has to become normal.
I think this country is about revenge and retaliation. And restorative justice is excellent when families of the victims, when families come forward and they want to participate in restorative justice, they want to meet with the offenders to find out what caused them to do what they did to their loved ones. I think that is that is exceptional. And it's, to me, that is so, I admire anyone like that. But then there are some that they seek revenge, they seek retaliation. And whether they're connected in some way to people that are involved in the penal system or whether they have friends or whatever the case may be, a lot of them, they do not want to accept the fact that the person is even serving in prison or on death row or serving life without or serving life sentences. That isn't even enough vengeance for them. And it's sad that we don't have a system that protects these people once they are sentenced to prison, that protects them from all these issues that go on following their incarceration. And I think that's what has to do with a lot of these suicides around the country.
Yeah, what you describe is the endless cycle of revenge, because, you know, the crime cannot be undone. It has to be acknowledged. It makes sense that there has to be a punishment. But revenge is an endless cycle. It's a devastating cycle, and it leads to nowhere, because even when somebody is killed by lethal injection, then still the loss is there, then still the crime has not been undone, you know. Only restoration of the damage during life by coming together, that's the only way. There is no other way. There is, in fact, no other way. Everything else fails.
I believe that.
Yeah, and it's an ancient old concept, because, you know, the indigenous people, not only in the United States, but everywhere, they had these peace circles, you know, then they had to smoke the peace pipe and they had to talk about what happened. And that's, in fact, that's where restorative justice comes from. It's ancient old. And I think that's, yeah, for me, it's the only solution to problems.
Do they have that in the Netherlands? Do they have that in Europe?
Yeah, I've given restorative justice training in prisons.
You give training?
Yeah, I'm not at the moment, but I gave these trainings, and that's why I also experienced for myself that, you know, for the incarcerated, it was very important to get insight in his own crime, in his own background, the path that he had walked, you know, his life path until that moment of the crime. We talk about crime. We don't deny it. I'm not going to make it, you know, deny it or look smaller. But I look at the crime without judgment, because I always say I'm not in court. You know, that's not my role. You know, when a person has committed a crime, then he gets convicted, and in court, he gets judged. And after that, then the rehabilitation has to start. But keep judging him because of the crime, it leads to nowhere. It's useless, completely useless, and it's bizarre. It has no meaning. But that's what I see in the United States. It's that endless cycle of violence, but also the endless cycle of judgment and condemnation. Do you say condemnation, condemning people?
And you know, the thing is too, the media doesn't help, because the media will say they didn't show any remorse, and I don't understand how the media can tell how people show remorse. I mean, you could tell because you are a psychosocial therapist. But for people that are inexperienced in those areas to be in the media and to be coming out with statements like that, it just doesn't make sense. Because people, they express their differently.
Yeah, but media is, in fact, the media in the United States it's not a free voice. The media in the United States is heavily influenced by corporations. It's all funded by corporal power. So the corporal power decides what they want you to say. So if you talk about media, they are not neutral. You know, when you look at Russia, then they are not, the media in Russia is, how do you say that? It's owned by the state. By the country, by the state, and in the United States, the media is controlled by the corporations that are funding the media. Your country, and you know, the comedian in the past, he's there, he passed away, I don't know how many years ago, but George Carlin, he has a very good act on it. He has a very good, really, he says, you don't have freedom, you have owners. And the owners are the corporations. They decide what you get to see on television. They decide what people say on media. Corporations decide what you buy, what you think, what you do. And a lot of people are not aware of this. We think we are free, but we are not free.
And they
are not free, and
they are the ones that are making profits off of prisons for profit, because they're the ones investing in the prison system. You know, it all makes so much sense. Why?
I told you a while ago, I don't know if you remember it, it's a long time ago, that I saw an article in a newspaper that said that the state, I don't know anymore which state it was, but the state was suing the politicians because the prison became too empty. They could not make enough money.
I remember that. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah. I don't know what state it was or what newspaper. I really don't know anymore, because it's, I think I have a photo of the article. I will look it up.
Yeah, I think it might have
but
been
that's the thing.
I'm not sure though.
Yeah, I can look it up, I think. But that's the whole problem. So you have two forces when it comes to mass incarceration. You have the political force, but the political force is influenced by corporal force, you know, the lobbyists. Millions of donations for elections. So the corporate power stands up, you know, is bigger, it has more power than politicians. So you have the corporate power on the one side who wants to keep the prison system full, and on the other side you have prison reform groups who want to make that change, and they are fighting all the time, and it's the money that wins. That's
wow.
The biggest problem. Yeah, that's how I see it. Because, you know, what's happening in the prison, a lot is already known. I mean, if I can know it, I can look it up on the internet, I can see articles, books, then everybody can. I mean, I can, you know, even in the Netherlands, I can find books about it and all that. So, you know, it's out in the open. So then you have to ask yourself, okay, it's out in the open. Why doesn't it change? What is the hidden agenda? And this is the hidden agenda. We are owned by the corporations. That's behind all of that. When you look at racism, you have systemic racism in the United States. And it's a problem in communities, but it's a very useful tool for politics, because when people fight each other, they cannot unite and protest. You see, that's the conquer and divide, divide and conquer principle. That's what racism is about. Look at what happened to the abortion law. People fought each other. So when they fight each other, they stay weak, and they cannot, you know, protest against these huge corporations the very rich of the rich. They own the world, in fact, the Western world. We are led by these powers, and they also own politicians. Politics has not that much of a power as we think. You know, there are elections, but in fact, politicians, they will listen to the corporations that, you know, that give the most of the money for these expensive elections. It's all in the money. Even when you look at environmental problems, you talk about the nature, you talk about the planet, and you talk about life and the destruction of life. Even that has a monetary value. You know, it's measured by money. How much money do we spend on it? Well, it concerns the life of the human species. Yeah, for me, it's insane. But, yeah, no. It's, you know, yeah.
You know what I have a problem with in we only have about 10 minutes, but I wanted to bring this issue up too. Legislative members who they have their constituents, they advocate on behalf of their, when they're going through something that involves the penal system. The legislative members are the ones that make the laws, and yet for some reason they seem to only go so far with the prison officials. It's almost as though they're afraid to speak out or to resolve issues with the penal system still falling around about. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, maybe I think they also have to deal with different agendas. And it might be not the fault of one individual, but I think they, you know, if they have this position of being a politician and they want to make change, but there are some very important influential parties that don't want that, what do you do as a politician? You know, we don't know the agenda. They might have multiple agendas. They have to deal with multiple parties. There are really some parties who really benefit from full prisons. Locking up people makes money. We know that only a part is in the prison what is right. You know, there is a very huge number of incarcerated people who have psychiatric problems. They should be in a psychiatric hospital. They should get treatment. But they end every time they end up in the prison. And then they get released with some medicine, and then they run out of medicine. They cannot buy new medicine. They get involved in the same problems. They end up in prison again. That's what you see a lot with a huge number of incarcerated people. Then you have the innocent people. There's the Innocent Project. There are these huge organizations who get multiple letters a day from people who are really, you know, proven to be innocent, but they cannot buy themselves out. So, you know, you get incarcerated, you are innocent, you cannot get to court. We know that more than, I believe it's about 95 or 97% never sees court because you have to do a plea bargain. Otherwise, they might get life while they are innocent or 30 years, so they have to do a plea bargain. That's not judgment. That's making money. That's doing business.
Yeah.
And I know the Fifth Amendment says that every single individual has the right to go to court. So,
you know, as well, a lot of universities have these law students, and they have their professors that actually do they have these projects that actually help prisoners that are in need of whatever the case may be, not with all issues, but they have some that will review their transcripts, their initial trial transcripts, some that are working with them on their post-convictions or their appellates. This is across the country, and a lot of loved ones of the incarcerated are not familiar with this too. So that's another thing that they should look into, are these universities that may be able to help their loved ones behind the wall in the projects that they do.
Yeah, but I also think that especially law students who are fresh, who are starting, who have a lot of energy, they should unite and stand up together against the system, because I think that's the only thing that can make the change.
Yeah.
You know yourself how these procedures are. It can take years. And what are we talking about? Many times it's at small issues. That take years, you know, these procedures can take months or years. And that is in itself a sick thing. And that keeps the prison full. I think parties should unite. And you also have that all these states have different rules, different regulations. There are some states in the United States who have reformed their prison system. Who implement elements of the Norway prison system. You have that in the United States. But there is so much difference between states. I mean, you have states who have the death penalty, other states who have life without parole, and it's so different.
You know, often wonder with legal organizations, these legal law firms, why they're getting all this funding, and they can recruit law students and criminal justice majors from the universities across the country. There's so many students that are just longing to be able to do their internships with a lot of these law firms. And yet these law firms are saying they can't help a lot of these individuals incarcerated because they don't have enough staff. But yet they will not recruit all of these law students to work with them to help, even if they just were to go through their cases to review their cases or to help in some other way. And then there was one legal services that sent a paralegal in to meet with the prisoner, and that paralegal gets to the prison and is told by the guards the prisoner didn't want to see her. Instead of saying, well, I'd like to have him tell me face to face, she just leaves and she never went back.
Yeah.
But yet I'm sure they put that in with their confirmation that they had a client and they did something for the client, but I'm sure they didn't put down that they never actually met with the client, but that they went there. So a lot of these things are it's unfair to those who are incarcerated seeking help.
It is unfair. It's such a rotten system. It's rotten, on all sides. And that's a big problem. There are so many issues concerning this prison system. And the painful thing is that it benefits the corporal powers. That's really so painful that money is made by living bodies, because that's what it is.
You know, there's a lot of coalitions and there's a lot of groups that are working on abolishing life without parole and life sentences. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's very difficult for loved ones who have incarcerated loved ones behind those walls serving life or life without parole. It's heartbreaking because they don't want to get involved because they know their daughter or their son is being deprived of participating in any programs, that they are being deprived of everything that they are trying to do to show that they have done something positive while incarcerated. So these people that are preventing them from doing all of these things in the penal system, these prison officials, they're doing it purposely. And yet no one stands up for these kind of individuals that are being deprived of these things.
Exactly. No one really stands up for it.
And it just brings more frustration to the families. It brings more frustration. It brings more chaos into the situation that doesn't have to be. But Marian, we're running out of time. So if you will, once again, give all of your information to the audience to let them know how they can reach you. Again, when the book will be out, when the film will be out, and see where we can go from there.
Okay. My website is www.deeperjustice.com. I will get a new website, but it's not ready yet, so they are making it, still building it. I'm on Facebook with my Facebook page, Deeper Justice. I'm on LinkedIn with my own under my own name, and on Instagram with my own name. The book is now ready to be published. I don't know exactly the date, but it will be soon now, and I will keep you all informed when I know what the exact date is. It will be translated because I want American people to read it, not because it has all the solutions, but I hope it leads to discussion, further discussion, and more awareness, and maybe it contributes to taking the right steps to end this evil system, because that's what we want. The film is called Death Row Angels, and I talk a little bit about it. It will be released on November 25 this year on Amazon Prime, but first it will only be released in the Netherlands, in Belgium and Germany and Luxembourg, but later on we think it also will be released in the United States and everywhere, and it will be ready to be streamed there for the next 5 years. So that's my information, Leona.
And they can also find you. They can also find you on the internet just by typing in your name, Marian Jacobs, psychosocial therapist. Will bring up a lot of that too. So I want to thank you again, Marion, for coming on. I am really thrilled about the book. I'm thrilled about the film, and I'm going to be looking forward to seeing it all. And I know that you have been a blessing to a lot of people, incarcerated included. And I want to thank you for your thoroughness in all the work you've been doing. Deeper Justice is exactly what you've been doing. So thank you again.
Yeah. And thank you too, Leona.
You know, I want you to come back on too before the film and the book, so you can just update us on what's going on as well. So hopefully we'll see you either next Wednesday or the Wednesday after, if you're available anytime.
Yeah.
Just let me know. And I thank you so, so much for coming on.
Thank you, Leona. Thank you.
Okay. Audience, we will now be ending this episode. Thank you all for listening in. And I hope that you will all join us next Wednesday. Tomorrow we will be having a guest on. I believe it will be Gerald Bowling from Bridges for Change. And he will be coming on, I believe, at 2 o'clock, so Eastern time. So please join us at that. Thank you once again, and we are now ending this episode.